Luke chapter 24, verses 1 to 12. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they went to the tomb, taking the spices they had prepared. And they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were perplexed about this, behold, two men stood by them in dazzling apparel. And as they were frightened and bowed their faces to the ground, the men said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you, while he was still in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, and be crucified, and on the third day rise." And they remembered his words. And returning from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna, and Mary the mother of James, and the other woman with them, who told these things to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter rose and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened.
Psalm 23, let me read from verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Hello, my name's Kev. I'm the minister of the church. Happy Easter. It's so good to have you joining us today for what is truly the birthday of hope. I always find it such a momentous day, Easter Sunday, as we gather with Christians around the world and down through the centuries who have gathered on this day to rejoice because Jesus is alive. And that's the reason why verse 4 of that reading is not just a nice thing to read at a funeral. Verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Psalm 23, it's probably the most famous piece of scripture, maybe the most famous piece of poetry ever written. There was an actor, he was famous for his recitations and his readings of the classics, and he always ended his performance by reciting Psalm 23. The crowd would love it. Usually they would rise at the end to thunderous applause because he'd brought the psalm to life so well. One night, a young man from the audience asked if he could read the psalm at the end of that night's performance. Actor was surprised, but said, yeah, okay. Probably out of vanity, thinking he won't do it very well, it'll make me look even better. Softly and stumblingly, the young man read the psalm. And at the end, there was no ovation. There wasn't even a clap. The only thing that could be heard was the sound of weeping. The audience had been so moved by his reading that they'd been brought to tears. The actor grabs the young man at the end and said, "What was going on there? I performed this hundreds of times. I've had a lifetime of training. I've never moved an audience to tears with it like that." The young lad replied humbly, "Sir, you know the psalm, but I know the shepherd. You probably know Psalm 23, but do you know the shepherd? Have you known him through this bizarre year that we all hope is going to turn out to be the most bizarre year of our lives?" David knew him. It says a psalm of David, the shepherd boy turned king, actually had a shepherd king of his own. Verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Not, I think there's someone vaguely out there who may be keeping an eye on me. Now, David knows his name. The Lord is the promise-keeping God of the Old Testament. And he says, my shepherd. This is personal. Verse 2, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Don't get me wrong, says David to us as he sings. It's not that I've lived a charmed life. Where I have enjoyed good things, they've all come from him. He wants good for me, my shepherd. He even cares about the burdens of my soul. And though his ways are sometimes not easy ways to walk in, they are always part of righteousness. And they're always good. I wonder what you make of that kind of faith. A childish need to cling on to something out there. Maybe you think it's more dangerous. There are clearly power dynamics in this shepherding. Is it authoritarian? Well, it's certainly humbling. David and we all seem to be sheep in the analogy. Yuval Noah Harari wrote a book called Homo Deus in 2017 to rave reviews. He argues that the ancients only believed in God because they couldn't control the world that they lived in. He says, we don't need to pray to any god or saint to rescue us. We know quite well what needs to be done to prevent famine, plague, and war, and we usually succeed in doing it. Homo Deus, the book title, doesn't simply mean we don't need God. It means humanity has become God. Really? Undoubtedly, in this past year, the scientists and the medics and the governments and the community spirit have done wonders. In all of that, we've seen the best of God's image in us. But we've also been shocked this past year at what humans will do to each other, say to each other. We were already a more pessimistic generation than the one before. And we created the global village that's allowed the pandemic to thrive. What will be the next unintended consequence? COVID has been the great collective humbler for sure. The shadow of death has loomed over all of us in a way that we've never known. You may have been to some very dark places personally, in your family. And I'm sorry for you if this Easter is one of raw grief. But even if we got through COVID fine without you, thanks God, one day death's shadow will loom large for each of us again. There's no vaccine against it in the end. And when you personally walk into that valley, all other comforters and technologies and worldviews will leave you alone. But my independence, my need to self-actualize rather than be led or defined by someone else. Will any of that be important when you face death alone? And how well is leading yourself going anyway? Now, you might be thinking at this point, hey, Kev, it's supposed to be Easter Sunday. And yeah, this is the point. See, Easter says it doesn't have to be that way. Do you know the shepherd? Jesus says in John 10, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. See, there's no objection to poor or abusive leadership, and there's been a lot of poor and abusive leadership, but there's no objection to it that isn't met in the self-sacrificial shepherding of Jesus Christ. And he has walked into the valley ahead of us. John 10, again, verse 17. I lay down my life that I may take it up again. I have authority to take it up again. See, Jesus went to war with a pandemic of death caused by a universal virus of sinful wanderings that were killing all of us. And on Resurrection Sunday, Jesus won that war. His raised, physical, evidenced body is like an invasion into the sickness. It's like a vaccine in that way, but not just one with healing properties, one with resurrection power. Do you want to know the shepherd? See, only Jesus can walk through death with you. Only Jesus has conquered and come out the other side. And only Jesus now holds open the door on his Father's house to anyone who will take his invitation to follow him in. That's what verse 5 is about here. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. It may be the most famous poem, but the sheep thing is the least successfully sustained metaphor in history, unless verse 5 is picturing something like this. I don't quite think sheep with glasses of wine is the thing. Now, the point is, looking after his people as our shepherd now, and one day looking after us as our host at the banquet of heaven. That's why he says you don't need to fear. It always makes me think about my mum, this psalm. She was 62 when she lost her battle with cancer 3.5 years ago. You know, she died without fear, my mum. It was amazing. And not because she was superhuman. She was always scared of things like heights and cats. And I know that some people just don't have the chip in their head that makes them afraid of death. It's nothing to do with being a Christian. I know some really keen Christians who do fear the mechanics of dying. My mum didn't fear because she knew the shepherd. And if you've got a Christian friend, I'd love you to ask them what it's like to be led by him. If you're a younger person, Christian, I'd love you to ask an older Christian what it's like. And the details will vary in the things we all say, but verse 6 here is just the most brilliantly succinct summary of the Christian story. It's a story of surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. When I was at Bible college, I studied a bit of Hebrew. You may know that the Old Testament is mainly written in Hebrew. I was terrible at the Hebrew. Only remember one thing, and it was from this verse. See, where in verse 6 it says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, the word is actually much stronger. Sometimes that word follow is a word that David would have used to mean in pursuit, in the negative sense, his enemies pursuing, following him relentlessly. And you may be trying to cling to God today and finding all kinds of other worries and enemies are the things that more closely seem to follow and are relentless in your life. But there is someone in greater pursuit of you today. Because Christian, wherever in the world you go, and whatever you do that messes things up, and however much this next year is better or worse than the year that's just passed, the Lord is hunting you down relentlessly so that he can be merciful to you and good. If you're only going to remember one thing from the Hebrew classes, that's not a bad one, is it? Do you know, it's so good to be a Christian, because even when I'm in the valley, I find that my shepherd is there, having mercy on me, offering hope, and giving me blessings to count. And that's just for starters. I said that verse is a summary of the Christian story. Verse 6 again. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. That's the bit for now. And the best is yet to come, because I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Forever. Even as it's written out in the original, that word forever gets a line of its own at the bottom. It's the thing that's meant to be ringing in our ears. Forever. It's a long time. Forever. A long time to stay at someone's house, even if you haven't seen them properly for over a year. Prince Philip says that the art of being a good guest is knowing when to leave. But the thing is here, it's not talking about you being a guest. This is about family membership in the Lord's house forever. We long for the end of this virus, and the easing of restrictions this week in England is a great step in the right direction. But God has a longer view of what would be good for you than another 50 years of virus-free living, which, to be honest, in all kinds of ways, will disappoint you in the end. See, you're an eternal soul. Where will you dwell? Forever. Can you even imagine? Forever. Imagine stepping onto a shore and finding it heaven. Imagine taking hold of a hand and finding it God's hand. Imagine feeling invigorated and finding it immortality. Imagine waking and finding it home. The resurrection of Jesus Christ stands as the irrefutable fact at the heart of history that says these are not simply just romantic imaginings. So keep clinging to him today, won't you? Trust him. Trust his leadership if you've never done that before. You can trust him.